Good morning, everyone, and happy Thursday, and welcome to I Take Bravo Very Seriously with your host, Dana. This is the second episode you're getting this week, and I hope everyone had a chance to listen to my bonus episode on Monday with the great Terry Maloney. Yes, guys, I interviewed Terry Maloney. It was such an amazing experience. The sound, unfortunately, was really crappy. Terry's headphones had static, and I am definitely no IT expert, but you know, if you push through, it really is a good interview. I think Apple Podcasts also now does like transcripts, so you can also you know, read it that way. Or I've also posted a bunch of clips on my Instagram, so you can definitely look at the closed captions on those. But it was definitely a really great interview and great to get to know Terry. today's episode is probably going to be a long one. I always say that, and it sort of depends. There's a lot of news this week. There was a lot that happened today. And when I say today, I actually mean Wednesday, which is when I record. There was a lot of podcasts that came out today in the Vanderverse, Vandersphere. Everything is going on. So why don't we just get into the episode? So news of the week, I'm actually going to start with Rachel Goes Rogue and just stick this in news of the week because her episode last week was something a bit different. She had someone interviewing her manager, Juliet Harris. So I actually just want to play you guys a clip from this because it's Juliet is an interesting person. I have actually spoken to her on the phone. She's an interesting being. She's quirky, and sometimes she can be, you know, kind of out there and says like really crazy things, but at the same time, she's been doing this for 24 years and has some really interesting insight. But there's clips like this that just made me go, huh? So here's one. All right, here you go, guys.
Why do you think it came out when it did? So my theory is not going to be a popular one, but I stand by it and I will go to my grave believing it, is that, so the Bravo sleuths are super sleuths, but women as a whole, pretty good at sleuthing. If I think my husband is cheating, and I can walk right over to his side of the bed when he's asleep and check his phone, because clearly she has a password, right? When you drop your phone, it doesn't unlock. So she had to unlock it. She unlocked it, if the story is true, to check it at that moment. Why? Why would you, if you suspect anything at any time, and we already know because Sheena and on her podcast, they came out and said something about, Ariana said, oh, this is sus behavior, right? And in the lawsuit that Rachel filed, she also said that she believes, you know, this was known beforehand. So I don't believe that. I don't believe that's how it's happened. I believe that was propped and sent. And I don't know, maybe she saw it the day before and she told production and off they went. But if you think that some of your partner is cheating, you have access to their phone 24 hours a day. Wait till they're asleep. Wait till they go to the bathroom. Go look at the phone. She had the password. So I don't buy that it fell out of his pocket and I looked at it and blah, 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 blah. I think that was set up for the whole thing.
So that was interesting. I obviously don't believe that. Ariana, I mean, she said that she had her womanly instinct that night on March the 1st to look at his phone. You know, she's obviously gotten in fights with him about Raquel before. I mean, that has definitely been brought up. I don't think this was propped. I don't think Scandoval was like a creation. And, you know, a lot of people have said, instead of necessarily putting blame on Raquel, a lot of people are like, especially like Nick Vile, like he's saying like, oh, she's getting a lot of bad advice. And Tom has also said that, speaking specifically of Juliet. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a PR person. I have absolutely no idea if she's getting like good or bad advice. But when it comes to that and pushing that narrative, and that narrative was also in her lawsuit, that wasn't one of her causes of action, but she did mention in her lawsuit that she believed that Scandoval was orchestrated and, you know, Ariana had always known about it. So that's Juliet. She's an interesting character. So then after that, my friend over at Breaking the Rules Pod, you should give her a follow. So she had an interesting interaction with Brock over this. So she posted a clip, the same clip as me, from Rachel Goes Rogue. And then Brock had a little response here. Let me just find it for you guys. Let me see. Okay. So Brock responded to Breaking the Rules pod to the clip that of Juliet, and he wrote, "Damn, I would have thought by now Raquel would have gotten better PR, but apparently her PR just wants to leverage her working relationship for what? Clout? Don't ever come for Ariana in the situation, you callous. See you next Tuesday." Then he deletes it. But before that, Juliet actually wrote back and wrote, "When individuals resort to name-calling instead of engaging in constructive or respective dialogue, it reflects more on their character and parenting values than on the person they're addressing. As a father to a young daughter, I encourage @BrockDavies to reflect on the example he sets in addressing women he's never met on social media for expressing their opinion. The internet is forever. I always invite respectful dialogue @ItGirlPublicRelations." So again, right, like Juliet has these moments of chaos, but then she also has these moments of like extreme clarity, and like, Brock, that's not cool. We don't call women that in this country. Absolutely not cool. And maybe Sheena should be spending some money on some social media training for her husband. Also in the Vander news, Lala buys a $3.1 million home in LA. It is 5 bedrooms, 3.5 baths, and 5,109 square feet. Very, very nice. I am still confused about all of these people's financial situations, because now Lala has the apartment, the Palm Springs home, so I don't know if she's keeping that, but it seems like each of them at this point have, like, several homes. So that's cool. Jeremy Maddox got engaged, so that is Ariana's brother, and as you'll remember from my episode last week, I mentioned that Jeremy said that he hasn't been speaking with Ariana in months, so it's interesting that he got engaged, like, in front of Sheena. That was sort of weird, and it seems like he spends a lot of time with Sheena and her family. And then Jeremy actually spoke to Us Weekly this week after getting engaged, and in the article it says, "Jeremy Maddox is opening up about why he hasn't spoken to sister Ariana Maddox in months. Why I haven't been talking to my sister and Scandoval are two totally separate things, Jeremy exclusively told Us Weekly on Friday, March 29th. I just want to clarify that I haven't talked to my sister due to me having to stand up for my fiance." Oh, that's interesting. Jeremy cited interactions between Ariana and his fiance Rachel as the reason for the rift. Jeremy got engaged to Rachel on Sunday, March 31st at Jax's Studio City with Sheena Shea and Jax Taylor in attendance. "There's been some small microaggressive gestures towards my fiance, and that's what led to me not talking to my sister. It's been going on for quite some time," he claimed. "I think that we've just been the kind to let it go and let it pass, because of course I've always just going to have my sister's back, but I was put in a position where I chose my sister, or do I choose the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with?" Jeremy isn't sure what caused the alleged disconnect between Ariana and his fiance, adding, "I feel like no one can really put their finger on why that was going on. Ariana is a sweet, kind girl. I love her so much, so it's not always in your face all the time. It's just little slight things that maybe not everyone would notice." Earlier this month, Jeremy surprised Vanderpump Rules fans when he mentioned on a podcast that he hasn't spoken to Ariana, or he hasn't been in contact with Ariana. He has since clarified the timeline of events. "I reached out to her in December, basically just saying, I love you so much. I would love to talk to you soon," he noted. "Then she never opened it or responded, so I tried. I haven't heard from her, and I would love to hear from her when she can," he told us. "I know she's very busy, and I'm extremely supportive of everything that she's doing and everything that she's accomplished, but I miss her and would love to hear from her." He continued, "That's my sister. She changed my diapers. She loves me very much. She's always kind of seen herself as my protector, and I would say most certainly we could get to a point of being closer. That's kind of what I'm yearning for." Jeremy said he had no idea in his mind that he can reconcile with Ariana, adding, "Neither of us is very good about communicating our feelings, which is why we need to just have a raw, organic talk." The former Vanderpump Rules star also clarified where he stands with Tom Sandoval. Jeremy and Sandoval, 41, were on good terms until news broke in March 2023 about Sandoval's affair with Rachel Raquel Levis. Sandoval and Ariana called it quits at the time, and he has been on the outs with most of their friend group since. "I don't think that me and Tom could ever be friends again and be back where we were. I'll always have my sister's back," Jeremy told us. "But obviously there's things that I would like to call Tom out on. He did something very grotesque to me and my family, and I think that deserves a conversation." While he's not speaking to Ariana at the moment, Jeremy gushed over her success since the scandal. "I always support my sister. I love her very much. I'm so excited for her and proud of her for turning such a negative into such a positive," he told us. "I will always 100% support everything she's doing, and I'm excited for what the future holds." That's it. So that's strange. I mean, based on last week, I think everybody was assuming that the reason they weren't speaking had to do with him, like, wanting to talk to Tom. And now it seems like something to do with with Jeremy's fiance, which is very strange. I remember seeing her quite often in the Dancing at the Stars audience, so I don't know where that rift sort of came from or what he means by microaggressions. but I hope we get some more clarity there. The whole Roni cast is coming back, including Jenna Lyons. So that's really interesting. They haven't started filming yet, but they will be soon. I can't believe we're going to get Jenna Lyons back because we really thought we weren't. So that's exciting. But 100%, we are not going to be getting her fiance, Cassie Bird. She's totally going to be keeping that private, which, you know, I guess it is what it is. Jax last night was at Jax's saloon or whatever he calls his place, Jax's Studio City. And he was just like going off about how fake he feels Vanderpump Rules is now. I'll just play this clip. So yeah, I don't know what he's going off about or why he seems so mad, but like, I guess he feels that like in the old days, like in his days, it was a lot more organic and a lot less scripted. And unfortunately, I mean, regardless, it has nothing to do with him. This is because of Scandoball. This is the most inorganic, disjointed, scripted feeling season that we've ever had because of this very disjointed situation in the friend group. We also got some information from Katie and Dana from Disrespectfully, because as you guys will recall on Vanderpump Rules from last week, the bomb got dropped that Katie slept with Max Boyens. And my first thought when this happened, well, when I heard this originally last summer, because we were all like stalking filming, I was like, of course you would have asked Dana first, because as you guys recall, not only is Dana Kathan best friends with Katie, but she also dated Max Boyens as well in season 8. So I just assumed that of course she would have asked her. So I'm actually just going to play you guys a clip from Disrespectfully so you can get a sense of what's going on.
Because obviously, like, the first thing I thought about was you, because I was like, I don't do that. I'm not somebody that, like, competes with my friends or, like, tries to get me validation of, like, hooking up with people that my friends hooked up with. I don't know. I don't like to, like, cross-contaminate in that sense, period. I don't do that. I don't break, like, girl code like that. So I was just like, fuck. I was like, I want to talk to Dana immediately. I can't, like, text you. I don't even want to pick up the phone and call you. I was like, I want to see you and tell you. And I knew that, like, and whatever happens, like, I have to, like, accept that. If you're like, fuck you, I never want to talk to you again, I have to accept that. And I hate that because, like, I did that to myself. But, like, I have to accept that because of, like, my own actions, you know? But I couldn't undo it, obviously. Then when it comes out on the show and production hears about it, they're like, oh, well, now we're going to take control of this and how you're going to, like, tell Dana. And I had to, like, hold it.
So my initial reaction, I was shocked. I was, when you told me, because when I didn't know what the context of the conversation was, I was just like, I didn't know what I was expecting we'd be talking about, but I certainly didn't think it would be that. I think my main thing about it is I do not want my name mentioned in the same sentence as his name ever again for the rest of my life. And I'm sure that he also feels that way. So it kind of felt like I was then, again, lumped into this narrative that I just had not wanted to be part of for a really long time. And so it was more about that. We've obviously talked about it. But the thing that bothered me more than anything is that this event happened between the two of you and you didn't know if I was going to be upset about it. And then, like you said, would have to, like, answer to that after, and it could have affected our friendship, but I could not have a lower opinion of Max Boyens if I tried. It is in the gutter.
So yeah, really interesting. I knew that Dana had filmed a little bit this season, but I didn't think it was enough that it was like a whole storyline, and I don't know if they're gonna end up showing that conversation that they had, but that's crazy that Katie didn't tell her in advance and that she actually had to hold it because production made her. So it's so crazy how we keep hearing sort of back and forths about, like, whether production makes cast members do things or whether they don't, right? But I just thought this was wild, and thank God they're still friends and everything's okay. I was just really surprised that, you know, I mean, obviously this was like a drunken thing and Katie probably wasn't thinking much, but like she said, she could have really lost Dana out of it, right? I mean, you just don't do that, right? And sometimes there's the consequences and sometimes there isn't, and thank God in this situation there wasn't. We also got a new episode of We Signed an NDA today with Tom Sandoval's ex-assistant Anne, who I love, save Anne, hashtag save Anne. She was talking a bit about what happened in terms of her firing, which comes up a bit on last episode, and as well as tonight's episode, or sorry, not tonight's episode, the other night's episode, which I will be recapping, but I just want to give you this clip from We Signed an NDA, so you can get a sense of what Anna's saying.
You know, it does become kind of like this, like, brother-sister-mom relationship, but I would have a really good time going over there, and I really did love my job. You know, pre-scandal, it was really great. It was also during the pandemic, so I felt like, you know, me, Tom, and Ariana kind of became sort of a small little family. And I know since, you know, post-scandal, the relationship between Tom and Ariana became extremely tense. There was some friction between them, to put it politely, especially over the house. You know, they were in a situation where they had to live with each other after a really painful breakup, and being the go-between was extremely difficult. So I could see why people are confused by my actions, and I do feel badly, but at the end of the day, I wasn't happy. I'm not cut out to, you know, be a go-between in the very volatile situation. It gets tough, and interviewing for a job with Ariana seemed like a silver lining or an opportunity to be in a more happy, peaceful work environment that, like, leaned toward my interests.
So I think that's totally fair, and she goes on to explain that, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with career advancement and wanting to do more for yourself and wanting to work for a girl boss, and she was also explaining what she does in several of her episodes about some of her mental health issues and how she didn't explain in, like, great detail, but basically working in that environment was impacting her mental health, and it is what it is, and, you know, she didn't set up the location of the interview regardless, so I continue to stan Anne always and forever. The last piece of news of the week, I guess, is just that Lala went off on Wednesday on Give Them Lala. She had Heather McDonald on her podcast, who's a comedian and a close friend of hers. Basically, she said that she understands the way that Ariana is feeling and that she's angry and not ready to move on, but then she feels like Ariana needs to then explain to her or to everyone why then she's able to still live in the house and why she's able to have a new boyfriend 10 days later and all of these things. I'm like, ugh, this isn't good, Lala. Then she goes on to make a comment about how Ariana never stood up for the other girls when Tom was being misogynistic towards them and would always be like, oh, this is what I love about Tom. And Lala's like, what, that he's, like, yells at women? And then she also said that, you know, basically, Ariana needs to, like, buck up and, like, have a conversation with Tom, like, a productive, real conversation when it comes to the pets. And she said that she would have done the same if she were filming with Randall, and she had fully prepared herself to have to film with him for season 10 because she thought that producers might do that to her. And she told them that either they can do that, and then she's just going to run her mouth and, you know, she's going to mention it at all, and knowing that they would never be able to keep that all in, or they could not have him on the show. So that's what happened there. But to actually, like, literally act like you've mentally prepared yourself to have to film with him because you knew you might have to, it just, Lala, you would not even allow Schwartz to play pickleball with him. So you were not going to film with Randall. In a million years, you would have quit the show, or you would have, like, sued the show, or you would have gone nuts. So no. But yeah, she really, really just went off. Like, it's very clear that she just does not want any more of these friendships, and that is something you'll hear in my interview with Terry Maloney. If you go back and take a look, you know, Terry was very hurt by the comments that Lala is making, and Lala is just continuing to make them. She is just doing media after media after media, just saying these negative things about the group and saying that she's just never, you know, the reunion changed everything for her, and she's just really making a lot of negative comments about everybody. One of those things being, I forget if I spoke about this last week, but someone had sent Give Them Lala, like, her podcast or whatever, data which showed everybody on the cast and how many fake followers they have, or, like, bot followers, and this was apparently determined by whether they were inactive or not. And I don't know why an inactive follower would necessarily be a bot or, like, a bot follower, but okay. And then, so she's reading off these numbers that, like, Katie has 40,000 and this person has, like, 70,000, but she has zero. Anyways, I think Bravo Buds did a look into this and found that to be, like, absolute nonsense and none of those numbers to be true or real. But again, like, why are you doing this, right? All right, well, that's it for news of the week.
Summer should be fun. Mena, Have fun.
Okay, let's get into our Summer House recap. So Summer House from last week starts off with Carl not coming to break the Friday cycle of him getting in fights with Lindsay. Okay. Again, guys, these people are supposed to be getting married in like a few months and they fight every single weekend. Aside from that, you know, all we've been talking about is Carl and Lindsay, and now we seem to have forgotten about Kyle and Amanda because they hate each other. I have been so focused on Carl and Lindsay that I like didn't even notice this, or not to this degree, definitely. So like, they're all sitting at the table to have dinner, and Amanda says something like, oh, I think they were asking like what everybody's favorite part of the week was, and she's like, that Kyle left. Okay. And then Craig is there for the weekend with Paige, and Kyle decides this would be a good time to ask Jesse if he wants to second guess how hard he hit on Paige for the first two weekends. And Craig, like, he didn't make a big deal of it. He was like, oh, you know, I would too. She's a pretty girl. There's nothing wrong with that. And Amanda freaks out at Kyle for bringing this up. And then it just becomes so awkward around the table. And he's like, what's wrong with you? It's like you're wound up like a ball of yarn. And he's like, you didn't give me any affection except for like one kiss earlier or something. And Amanda's like, Kyle doesn't think before he speaks and he needs to shut his big mouth and he doesn't need to say everything. And Kyle asks Jesse, like, why Amanda acted the way she did. And it's like, bro, you're asking someone you barely know why your wife of 10 years is acting a certain way? How would he know? Dude, how would he know? But Jesse was like, well, bro, it was outrageous. I personally, I don't think it was that bad. I mean, Jesse was hitting on Paige in public, like, with cameras. So the idea of bringing it up, I guess it could have gone bad. Like, if Craig was upset about it, it could have started a fight, and maybe that's why Amanda's mad. But quite honestly, I'm not quite sure why Amanda's so mad, but she is mad. And Amanda just like approaches him after dinner, and she's like, she says, it's fucked up and embarrassing. And he's like, what is your problem? Like, he really doesn't get it. And she said, she's so mad and she doesn't want to go out. And she's just like, oh, I am so mad. I am so mad. And he's like, there is so much more important shit. And Amanda's like, have some respect for people. And then she says to herself, I just can't. I can't do this with him. And Paige says, like, there's a deeper level where what she's really mad about is shit that he said about her a couple of weeks ago, like about kids. And she's fed up with that. And that makes a lot more sense, right? It's sort of like, it's not about the past, if you think about it. Like, what she's really upset about is all the terrible things he's been saying about her for the past couple of weeks. But it's an issue. I mean, like, for her to get this upset and not to want to be around him and just be like, I can't stand him, like, it's giving divorce vibes, guys. It's not good. So then the gang go out somewhere. Like, I can't even really tell where they are. And they're all wearing, like, Christmas hats, and I, like, never understand what's going on, but that's fine. And then Kyle decides to pull Lindsay aside for a talk, and he is so drunk. And this is not the time, but he does it anyway. And he says that, basically, he says, Carl has wanted a relationship ever since Kyle and Amanda got together, and he said that Carl is so committed to like seeing this thing through that he's pushing through some of the red flags, and then he goes, I mean hardships. So he literally calls Lindsay like a red flag to her face. Then Lindsay's like, wait, are you saying he's so committed to seeing it through like the marriage more so than the relationship? But again, Kyle is so drunk, so he's just like, no, like, I know he loves you and wants this so bad, but maybe try to work through all this stuff. And then Lindsay tries to explain this to him, and so she says, but listen, if I have one sip of alcohol and have an emotion other than happy, it's a problem. And if she's not happy, or she's not having fun, or being like a Stepford wife, Carl can't handle it, and then he questions her on her alcohol. And she's like, until he's perfect, he can't judge me, so I question him back on what he's doing. And Lindsay's like, is that fair? No. And Kyla's like, listen, I'm here for you both, and they both hug, but it's like, we're still just in this weird place with Carl and Lindsay where their communication is just so disjointed. Like, I do understand what she's saying, but what I don't think she understands, and again, I could be wrong, but from like observing the fights, it's not a matter of her just not being happy or not being a Stepford wife or not smiling for a minute. It's a matter of her going chaotic and screaming and getting in these massive fights and accusing him of drugs and accusing him of being mad at her and not letting go of anything and just saying, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Like, you're picking and picking and picking at him. So it's not really just this matter of like, oh, I'm not happy, or oh, I'm not having fun, and oh, I'm not a Stepford wife, and he just can't handle it. It's these long drawn out moments of you not being happy or you getting upset or you this and that. Like, that's what he can't handle. It's just wild. So then Carl ends up getting there on Saturday, so the next day, And Paige, Craig, and Amanda are, like, all in the bed together, and Paige is like, she feels bad for Lindsay about the sex thing with her and Carl, or sorry, yeah, her and Carl, and how Lindsay had said that Carl doesn't initiate. And Amanda said that Lindsay gets super upset about the deeper rooted issues. Like, that's what she thinks she's really upset about, like how he's not motivated and about their sex life. And I do agree, like, not the sex life thing, like, we'll get back to that, but I definitely think she's upset about his lack of motivation. She's definitely mentioned that, you know, like, she even said, like, I can't, you know, work ethic and motivation is what, like, gets her going, right? That's what she wants in someone. And Paige is like, she needs a friend to tell her, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to. And Paige said that she was that for Amanda. And then they flash back to when Amanda, or Paige told Amanda that she just didn't have to do this. And Paige said that everyone needs a friend 2 months before their wedding saying, hey, you can get out of it now. And Paige said that she's never felt so much sympathy for Lindsay. And I am, like, so shocked by this. And Amanda said, you know, we want to see this happen for them, but not like this. And Paige is just like, it's almost like she has to put on a persona for him. And it's just so interesting to hear this change of heart from the girls, right? So Carl says, like, he doesn't come on Friday because he didn't want to, or he wanted to break the cycle of the Friday night fighting with Lindsay. And then he brings go-karts for, the like, this racetrack party. And that ends up being, like, the rest of the episode. It's just, like, this racetrack party. So before that, like, Craig and Sierra go on a liquor run. And Craig is talking about how cute it is to see her with a goober like West. And I really love Craig and Sierra's friendship. It's so cute that, you know, he tries to have a relationship with his girlfriend's friends as well. And he does tell her, you know, I would have told you Austin was a piece of crap, like, if you and I had been closer friends at the time. But, you know, now they are. Sierra tells the camera that she's way past Austin, but on TV you can't live it down and people still call her an idiot and dumb. And so she wants to be cautious because she doesn't want to be embarrassed again. And that is so sad, and that's something we're always hearing about on reality TV. It's like you have to live it in the moment and then you have to live it again 6 months later, and then people are always remembering it for years and years and years and are always calling you out about it, right? So Sierra ends up dressing up as one of those, like, wacky inflatable tube guys. Like, that was everything. That was hilarious. She's like, I don't need to dress sexy. I can be sexy anytime. I just love her vibe this season. So then Paige talks to Amanda about, like, how she's sort of been weird with finances and boyfriends. I really love her opinion on this, but she says basically, like, she doesn't want to have a boyfriend hold something monetarily over her head. And she tells a story where she said she had a boyfriend who bought them tickets to go to California, and she wanted to change the flight to an earlier flight, and the boyfriend said, when you buy the tickets, you can be in charge of what time the flight is. So she saw it as a control tactic as soon as it happened, and she said that she always knew from then on that she wanted to be independent when it comes to money. And Amanda explains to Paige why she and Kyle sort of, that wasn't, like, really an issue for them, because she said that he put, like, his whole bank account, everything, like, all of it, into Loverboy, and she was the only one with a full-time job, so then she had to work part-time, and then when she was working full-time at Loverboy is when she was getting paid, and the limoncello was actually her idea. And Paige was like, wow, he really doesn't give you enough credit. And that is so true. Like, he portrays her as lazy, but she was literally helping to support them. She did all the branding for Loverboy and the limoncello, so, you know, she actually does quite a bit. And so I think, yeah, he does need to give her a lot more credit where it's worth. Somehow I missed this, but Wes' sunglasses, like, cut his face. I don't know how it happened. I guess he, like, crashed one of, like, the go-karts or something, and he starts, like, bleeding profusely. But then Wes starts talking to Sierra about Austin, and she said that, you know, he was Craig's friend, who she considered, like, a mistake. I think, yeah, we're done talking about him. And then there's actually, like, an after show now for Summer House, starting from this episode. So this was, like, episode 6, I believe. So there's a whole session on that where West is like, can we stop talking about this guy, Austin? And then we have a talk with Craig and Paige, and we always get this talk, like, basically in every episode that they're in together, whether it's Summer House or Southern Charm, we have to get a conversation about where the relationship is going and about money and all this. But anyway, we get it. And so we get, with respect to the apartment, Craig is saying he just wants, like, a really cool apartment in the city, and it wasn't really about, like, trying to pay for it. And Paige is like, okay, but, like, you own a house in Charleston, and I want to have something that's, like, mine. She said she doesn't want to feel like she owes someone money or, like, they call the shots. And she said she doesn't want him to feel like the only way she will commit, though, is if he gives her money every month. And he basically just says, like, I don't know. Like, this whole thing is just still so confusing. But Paige, like, makes an excellent point, and she tells the camera, if she were to offer to pay half of Craig's rent, he would be like, oh, that's silly, of course not. But when she's doing the same thing, people are like, do you not love him? And she's like, no, I do love him. I love him so much. I don't want to mix these things yet. And she said, put it towards an engagement ring. And I totally love that. Like, again, you know, they're not to her in that place yet where she wants to mix finances. She wants to have things that are independent, because if they broke up, what would happen, right? Look at Tom and Ariana. Look at their home. They're literally splitting things down to, like, the Chechkas, right? So it's just crazy. So then Paige and Amanda decide to call Lindsay over to talk. And Paige actually thanks Lindsay for being so open and vulnerable when talking with them about, like, her sex life. And Lindsay was like, oh, was I? And Paige was like, yeah, like, you told us you guys don't have sex and you're getting married soon, so yeah. And Lindsay's like, well, I don't know, like, I think every relationship is different. And Amanda's like, yeah, but, like, do you guys think that maybe you did end up moving too fast? And Lindsay's like, you know, I think Carl thought I was going to get into a relationship and I was going to change. And Amanda tells the camera she doesn't think Carl thought Lindsay was going to change for him. She thinks he thought because they were in love and going to get married, she would have more respect for him or treat him differently than everybody else. I kind of feel like it's both, because yes, obviously he thought Lindsay would be in love with him and treat him with respect as his partner, but also, who did you think Lindsay was, right? Like, did you think she was going to be a different person than you've seen her in other relationships? You've also been in these many relationships with her yourself, Carl, where you couldn't stand it for very long. You've seen her with Steven and screaming at him about sandwiches, right? So the person that Lindsay is being now should not be that much of a shock to you. Like, he knows how much of a hothead she is. He knows how she fights. But I could also see him thinking, like, it wouldn't be like that with them. And then there's, like, a scene of the guys talking, and Carl is saying, like, the last two Fridays with Lindsay weren't great, and he said that he's learned things in couples therapy, and he's, like, really open to just, like, working on this, and he's like, you know, I'm open to going to anger management or trying other things, and I'm willing to. And the guys say, like, you know, it seems like you're doing all of the concessions, and if you do that, it's gonna lead to resentment. So then we're back, like, with Paige and Amanda and Lindsay talking, and Paige is saying, like, in this situation, she's very much on Lindsay's side, which I just find wild. And she's like, you know, when you guys fight, everyone is like, poor Carl, I feel bad for Carl. And then we go back to the guys, and Craig is asking whether they ever talked about pushing the wedding. And Carl's like, well, one of our first fights was about the wedding and pushing it. And she was like, no. And Jesse's like, you know, it's not our place to give you advice, but it feels very soon to be getting married, given the complications. Then we're back with the girls, and Lindsay's like, you know, there's these miniature flags, but they're not red enough for me not to do this. And she says, maybe that's naive of her. And the page asks her if she's positive, because it's easier to postpone or call it off than to get divorced months later. And the music that's playing, this dramatic music, I mean, obviously we know what's to come, but it's just so wild that, like, everyone, you know, is feeling like they almost need to interfere in a way, because they just know that the wrong thing is happening here, and they're just really just trying to help. So that was a pretty eventful episode of Summer House, I'd say. I'm really looking forward to next week's as well as the fact that we're getting after shows now.
I take sketch comedy very seriously, so it offends me when people just think that they can just do it.
Okay, let's get into our VPR recap. So this episode is mostly about this, like, water sommelier thing that Lala does at James's house. But we'll get back to that. So Anne interviews to be Ariana's assistant. Ariana says that she doesn't want things to be too contentious, so she ends up saying no, like, not right now, but maybe when she moves out of the house. And this whole interaction, this interview, happened in Tom and Ariana's house. So Tom was eavesdropping. Anne is saying things like, oh, you know, sometimes I have to pick up his dirty socks and underwear. And she literally looks so desperate to get away from Sandoval. And, like, I don't blame her. Like, save Anne, you know? And like I said, nothing wrong with, like, career advancement from, like, having to pick up dirty socks and underwear to doing something a little more. And Ariana was saying things like, you know, I want somebody where we could work together and could sort of read my brain and say in advance, like, oh, yeah, I know you don't want this. And that's just a different dynamic. And there's nothing wrong with career advancement. But anyways, then we have a scene with Tom over at Sheena and Brock saying that he wants kids and he thinks he'll be a good dad. He says he wants what Sheena and Brock have. I don't think Tom Schwartz is mature enough for that, despite the fact that I believe he's now, like, 42 years old. Like, he likes to dabble in things, and you can't, like, dabble in kids, right? So then we have a scene of Ariana going to Katie's, and they're talking about Anne. I just love how, like, actually, this episode should have been called, like, Stan Anne, right? Like, this poor woman who is not even a cast member on the show, and I hope she at least got paid, because she's literally in every episode. She's my favorite cast member at this point. She's amazing. So anyways, so Ariana goes over to Katie. She's talking about Anne, and she's saying that Tom actually made her cry because he was overhearing and he, like, came down on her, which was super sad. And then we have Sheena and Brock talking about how, you know, Brock wasn't supposed to say anything about Max sleeping with Dana because she was finally in a good place with Katie. And then Brock reminds her that Katie said last year that he wanted Sheena's life to burn up. Tom says it's hypocritical because Max is his best friend and Raquel was on the fringe, was like on the fringe friend is what he called her, like on the fringe of the friend group. But like, dude, she didn't want to see you make out with someone on TV in front of her. That's what this was about. This wasn't about someone who was like the best friend of the group. It was someone in the friend group. And by that, she meant someone on the show because she didn't want to have to see it, as no one would. I still find it absolutely bizarre that Schwartz does not care, like, in a jealous way. Like, there's nothing in him that's, like, upset that Katie slept with Max. But anyways, we'll get back to that. So Katie and Lala talk about, or sorry, Katie and Ariana talk about, like, the water party, and Ariana says that, like, short of removing herself entirely from this group of friends, it's not possible to not be in the same room as Tom ever, and Lala is her friend, so she wants to go to the water tasting. Okay, obviously not. You're going because production made you. And, like, the last couple of episodes have sort of felt like that, right? And I think I mentioned this to you guys. I don't remember what podcast it was on. It was either... It was definitely Alex Baskin, who's the executive producer of Vanderpump Rules. It was either on Sheena's podcast or Lala's podcast, or maybe his own, where he said something like, not long into filming, he basically had to have a sit-down with everyone on the cast and say, like, how are we going to move forward? How are we going to do this? And I feel like the episode from then on was from the Belmont on, which is where Ariana is now showing up to events and being in the same room with Sandoval. So then we get a Dana Cathan sighting, which I love at the water party. But yeah, this is starting to feel so produced. So Lala's talking about like what water has done for her as a sober person. And they're talking to this water sommelier guy, Martin, who I remember from last summer when, again, we were like stalking filming. And I remember him posting and us asking like a bunch of questions in the comments and stuff. It was so funny. So they end up drinking from like $1,000 bottle of water. And everybody's just like, it tastes like water. Then they order pizza after the guy leaves, and Tom tries to stop the driver because he didn't give them dipping sauce, and Ariana's like, ugh, he's, like, doing the most. And then Tom says, like, it's harder for him to be a wallflower with Ariana making comments about him under her breath. But, dude, this is a Scandoval redemption arc season, so you're not a wallflower. This is literally the season for you, so you're fine. Brock tries to help by telling Tom to try to talk to Ariana because they need to figure out how to talk to each other, which was a bad idea. Then we have a scene of Katie going to talk to Schwartz, and she sort of said that she's like walking a mile in Schwartz's pants, doing what he's doing, and Schwartz is like, I'm not mad about Max. But Katie's like, you've been screwing me over for years, so like, are you kidding? And she explains again that he couldn't respect her one simple wish, and he said it was a flimsy agreement, but he's sorry he hurt her, and this, I just can't believe, you know, he's still not taking real ownership for this. Tom said that Katie has this air of superiority, but he says that she fucked up a little bit. Honestly, I don't think she did, because she didn't have an agreement, or sorry, he didn't have an agreement with her, point blank. And Tom says, let's get dinner, and Katie's like, I don't want to, until you can make better choices. And then she says, like, clothing, and then they just start, like, roasting each other's outfits, and I love the way this ended with a laugh instead of a fight. Like, this is actually true reality TV. This is the only way reality TV can work. It's when you can be a kind of person who can find, laugh, and resolve. That is what we need. So we've got something here. So then Ariana is talking to the rest of the group, and she's talking about Anne and how Tom had asked her to leave. And then Tom overhears this, and basically Ariana is calling him a dog murderer. And Ariana explains to the group that Tom let Maya into her room and locked her in there for hours, and she ate wooden skewer chicken satay sticks and had to go to the emergency. And Tom is like, you never emptied the litter box for your cat. And she's like, yes, I do. And she's like, don't go in my room because that is my only safe place. Then Tom tells the camera that Ariana is making like a quick jump from accident to dog murderer. Then she's just like screaming at him like, second of all! And there is like fire in her eyes, and she's like, my lawyer will be dealing with you. And he's like, he can't respond to an email in 2 months. And she's like, you left the back door open the other night. It shows your carelessness. She's like, this was my dream home, and you ruined that for me and my children. And she's screaming, get the fuck away from me. Get the fuck away from me. Get the fuck away from me, like a million times. And Tom is like, you already got everything, Ariana. You got our friends. You got all the deals. And then you take my assistant. Ariana said, you ruined my life and my home in an attempt to kill my fucking dog. And then Tom ends up leaving. And it's just like, I have never seen such a volatile fight, especially between Tom and Ariana. Like, this is way more than the obtuse fight. You know what I mean? And then Lala tells the camera that Tom shouldn't have let Maya in the room, but Ariana left all this food out, so that's her fault. And didn't she do all these, like, garbage commercials? Shouldn't she know how to do that? It's like, God, Lala, what is wrong with you? Like, your friend is clearly hurting. And what is wrong with having something in your room if the door is closed? Like, in my opinion, it's sort of like saying, like, how could you leave food in the fridge with the door closed? Like, you know, like, she can have whatever she wants in her room as long as the door is closed and Maya is safe from it. Like, the problem here was that whoever locked her in the room and closed the door. So, of course, she was able to get to all these things. Yes, you have to keep your dog safe. But, you know, again, like, if you had food in the fridge or on a counter or in a place where your animal cannot get to it, that is fine. He created a situation where the dog could get to it. He put her in a situation where she could not get away from it. You know what I'm saying? So Schwartz calls Sandoval and he explains the dog situation again and saying it was an accident. And Sandoval's like, do you see the rage coming out of her? This is what I dealt with our whole relationship. And Schwartz is like, no comment. Because LOL, like, he clearly does not want to get mirrored in this again. And Lala tells her, Ariana, that she's going to have to have like a productive conversation with him. And she said she is not capable of doing that. And then Sheena tells the camera that the healthiest thing for Ariana's mental health would be to process this and to move on with her life. This is, like, definitely the angriest we've ever seen Ariana, and it's sort of only, you know, it's sort of the only time this season we've seen her side as opposed to the, oh no, poor Sandoval storyline. Brock and Sheena talk about Ariana and her anger, and Sheena's just like, you know, she's just not ready yet. Like, she's not ready to let go of that anger. And we have all, like, we all have to remind ourselves, like, this hasn't been that long. And, like, would any of you not act like that around a man who did you dirty like that? Like, I don't know that I would ever not be angry, right? It's not just cheating on her. It was such an elaborate thing. Like, why should she ever forgive him? Like, why should she ever not be angry, I guess? Except for herself and for moving on and that kind of thing. I just, again, it has not been that long. Like, it is very reasonable for her to feel this way at this point. So then Ariana has her designer Lucinda over because she helped her and Tom design the house, and she determined that Ariana had actually bought the majority of the things in the house. So Ariana's like, okay, I needed to know that because, like, she's like, I need to give this information to my lawyer as part of the agreement on how much, like, the house is worth, and so that her counter offer has no loopholes. Then we have beach day. So James draws the literal line in the sand for Ariana's side and for Tom's side, which we've seen him do a million times in the trailer and all the promos and what have you. So Tom is talking about how he was out the other night and he met this girl who puts on singles events. And then Schwartz says that he feels like Katie sleeping with Max made them closer and also, like, the same. It's like, what the hell? And Katie's like, no, we are not the same because you were sleeping with everyone while we were together. And Schwartz then makes, like, the worst mathematical equation ever, saying that statistically it's, like, nil if you look at the years and days they were actually together in comparison to the cheating. Like, dude, no. Brock then brings up Raquel and asks if Tom was just being flirty with her, like, in this context. And Ariana's like, can you guys not have this conversation in front of me? Because it's fucking disgusting. And honestly, Brock, you should not be bringing up Raquel in front of Ariana, and Tom should not be talking about dating in front of her either. Like, what the hell? It's like giving when Jax was on the pride float with Stassi and started talking about the girl he banged the night before. It's, yeah, like, maybe let's not talk about a singles event and dating right in front of your ex-girlfriend. Thank you so much, Tom. Tom says that he didn't fire Anne, but says that he told her to take a couple of days off. And then James is like, well, who's watching Maya when Anne isn't there? And Ariana's like, Maya is not Anne's, like, responsibility. And Ariana said that the dog and the cat are actually hers because she paid the adoption fees. And Tom said that he doesn't agree that they are hers. And James is like, well, you're gonna fight for her? And it's like, what the hell, James? Like, don't bait her like this and try to get them in a battle. Like, if he hasn't tried to fight for the animals yet, just let her have them. Like, why are you bringing this up? And Tom said they had this delusional idea that they would be more civil than Tom and Katie. Yes. Yes, that is extremely delusional. That is extremely delusional given what you've done. Ariana is like, none of you guys put him in check and it's disrespectful. And James says that she would be much more at peace if she just released some of the anger. And Ariana is like, Tom is such a misogynist and he only respects when men tell him things and to tell him to take it so the men should have. And it's true, like, you know, she is just sitting there, like, sort of being beaten up and everyone sort of expecting so much from her. And she's like, you guys keep shoving him down my throat. What do you expect? And she's 100% right. Like, the fact that she's even at this beach day with him, like, this must be freaking torture for her. And that is the end of the Vanderpump Rules episode. So let's move into the VPR after show. which was a lot of stuff, guys, a lot of stuff. So Ariana said that Tom has on numerous occasions left doors open and unlocked, and he invaded her privacy by going into her room by locking Maya in there for 3 hours. And the only reason that Maya was able to get to the emergency vet is because Anne had ended up hearing Maya in the room and letting her out. Sheena and Kristen talk about how Tom isn't aware of his surroundings. Tom said it was either him or Anne that left the door open. Tom said that Maya eats everything and that he left paintballs on the floor and she ate them and they taste like soap, so you can't leave soap on the floor. And it's like, no, Tom, you can't, you insane person. She could die. Dogs aren't like, ooh, delicious. Like, it's, they don't need to be eating chicken satay, right? Like, they eat their own poop. To them, that's delicious. So yeah, you cannot leave paintballs on the floor. That's actually insane. He said that Maya ate 400 laxatives. But again, like, shouldn't that be in the medicine cabinet? Like, this sounds like a situation of you being irresponsible, or maybe the both of you. Like, I don't know whose laxatives these were. I don't know why Maya is always getting into stuff. I mean, there's dogs that do that for sure. But then if you're out, then maybe the dog should be in a crate. Or maybe you should put things that could harm the dog out of the harm's way, like in the fridge or in a cupboard. Lala talks with Brittany and says that she thinks someone who is clean and grown and has done advertisements for trash should know how to do that. What the hell, Lala? Like, as I said, the door was closed, so it is not Ariana's fault. Schwartz thought it was weird and funny that Katie slept with Max, as I keep saying. Jax is like, okay, but most guys wouldn't be okay with that. And Tom's like, yeah, I wouldn't be okay if you slept with Ariana, and I would never sleep with Katie. Which is interesting, because I feel like they said something differently last year. This is what I really just don't get about him, and I talked with Terry about how I thought maybe Tom just didn't understand the whole the one kiss thing, or like no one in the friend group, because he doesn't see that boundary, right? Like, he feels like everyone's fair game. He said that he had to acknowledge the hypocrisy about the Raquel kiss when, again, this is not hypocritical, this was an agreement that they made, which he broke, and now it's a year later and he never gave her that boundary. Katie says it wasn't a revenge bang, but the timing was very delicious, and it was. Sheena said that she thought Katie had a thing for Max for a while and it was inevitable. James says that he never saw that side of Ariana before when she was yelling at Tom, which is something I said as well. That was intense. Brittany says she feels bad for Ariana because she still has so much anger and it's so hard on you, like, not to let that go. And Lola said, yeah, like, she's still 100 on the anger. Schwartz said that it was a little worrisome to see, like, how close it was to the surface with Ariana's anger. And Sheena said that she was surprised by how angry Ariana still is, and she wants for her to be able to let go of that. And then when they ask Ariana, she's basically like, whatever. And at the end of the day, whatever, right? Like, it's her anger, so I appreciate and understand that all of her friends are, you know, concerned for her, but you have to process this whatever way is best for you. And we really don't even know how she is doing that, because they're not really letting us in that much on her journey. This has been the Scandoval redemption arc, right? Brock said that it wasn't his finest hour at the beach, but he thought it was a good idea to try to have Tom and Ariana have a conversation. James says that Tom doesn't even want Kitty or Maya, and he was just being argumentative. Okay, but James, like, you brought it up, like, you taunted it. Tom said that Ariana got Kitty in New Jersey in a parking lot and adopted her, so, you know, he kind of understands that, but he's like, I did take care of Kitty a lot. Ariana said that he would love for her to be run out of this town, and that is totally true. Tom said that they got Maya together and that he named her, and he and Maya had a very special relationship. I'm sorry, Tom, but after all you've done, like, just let her have her kids, like, honestly. Like, you don't really want to take care of that dog. You just want to spite her. Like, you don't want this responsibility. You don't. Sheena said that Tom needs to shut the fuck up about the bills and who did what. She's basically like, who cares? With regards to Anne, Ariana's like, Anne's job is not a housekeeper. Tom said that she doesn't touch dirty laundry, but then they flash back to Anne saying that she had to pick up his dirty socks and underwear, and obviously I believe Anne. Tom said that Anne asked Ariana to work for her wearing a suit, and Schwartz was like, oh, she did that for the cameras and to be performative. That is so rude. Like, Anne is just being professional, and there's nothing wrong with wanting career advancements, as I keep saying. Ariana said that she didn't want Anne to, like, feel bad, and then she ended up getting fired anyways. Jax is like, wait, Tom, did you have this girl sign an NDA at least? And Tom's like, yeah, but then she started a podcast with the same name, so she's getting a letter from my lawyer. What the hell? Save Anne. I hope that everything is okay. I'm sure she's very well versed in what she's allowed to say and what not, and what she's not allowed to say as per her NDA. She's constantly referencing that on the podcast in terms of, like, I'm not allowed to talk about this or that. And even I contacted her to see if she'd be willing to come on my podcast, and she said that she wasn't allowed because of her NDA with the show. So, you know, screw you, Tom. He also doesn't seem to be realizing he's jeopardizing, like, her ability to make money. And, like, she doesn't have the same financial means as him. So, like, saying these negative things about her in the press could prevent her from being able to get another job. And it, you know, and she does talk about that a lot on her podcast as well, about, you know, the difference in their financial situations and how this situation actually created a situation for her where, yeah, so how Tom said it to her was, oh, let's take a couple days off. Then she didn't hear from him again until he hired a new assistant. And that really wasn't cool because she didn't know if she could apply for unemployment during that time. She could have been looking for another job. She wasn't making any money. And she doesn't have, like, savings or, like, something to fall back on. But anyways, you guys should definitely take a listen to We Signed an NDA. It really is a good podcast. Then they have Jason, Jesse, and Danny from The Valley on to do a confessional. Jason says it was weird that Raquel, Tom, and Ariana would always be hanging off each other and being like, I love you. And then the fact that two of them were hooking up on the side is sick and he will never get over that. I love Jason. He is the true voice of reason and I never want to stop seeing him on my TV. And then his lovely wife, Janet, says, you know, she doesn't think Tom is remorseful and or upset by his actions. He's upset by the reactions as opposed to his own actions. Very insightful, my dearest Janet. James said that Tom and Ariana need to take time apart. He said that that is the only thing that is ever going to, you know, lead to some peace is physical time apart from each other, from the house, all of it. Brock said for the sake of this group, everyone needs to start communicating. Schwartz said that if he gets to 50 and doesn't have kids yet, he'll be panicking. Lala ends up saying that age is just a number. And Britt and Lala say that Schwartz will be a good dad because he's into weird stuff like lizards. Again, maybe, but... You know, Janet says that he has some maturing to do, and I definitely agree there. Jesse says that as you get older and get more stuck in your ways, it's more, you have more trouble adapting to having a kid and making all those changes. But they all say that it's different in LA and that people hang on to their youth more and definitely don't have kids until later on. So that is it for Vanderpump Rules and the Vanderpump Rules After Show.
He's a f***ing battered wife! Look at him!
Okay, guys, let's get into our recap of The Valley. Guys, I love the show so much. I just love it so much. It is giving everything that we have been missing, not just in Vanderpump Rules, but just in reality TV. I just need Jax and Kristen in my life. Every week, forever. The Valley forever. Anyways, let's get into the episode itself. So Jax tells Brittany that Luke was upset that Alex was invited to Guys Night. Brittany said that she tried to stand up for Jax at Girls Night and that Kristen freaked out. So here's what the whole fight was. So we definitely saw this fight start last week in the episode, and we got it to be continued for this week's episode. Kristen brings up that Janet told Jasmine that Michelle is a racist and a Republican. So that is what the rumor is. Then she said that's what Zach told her, and Zach was like, I never said that. Then Michelle has a scene with Jesse, and she ends up telling him, like, this is the first time she's ever heard her name being associated with those words. She's like, I'm first-generation Mexican and Persian. So Michelle ends up calling Janet to see if this is true, because she felt so, like, caught off guard about it when it was, like, brought up at Girls' Night. Janet said that it's complete bullshit. She said that she had to put a boundary with Kristen about a year ago because her relationship with Alex was so up and down, and so Kristen didn't like that, and so now, whenever she gets the chance to throw Janet under the bus, Kristen will. This is really interesting. Like, I'm very curious about the history between Janet and Kristen. Janet tells Michelle that she doesn't think Kristen wants Alex's side of the breakup to make its way to Luke. Janet tells the camera that Kristen's view on Alex has changed when she met Luke. She said that she seems to now think that Alex is a narcissist and he was horrible and all the relationship issues were his fault, but Janet said that she's seen Kristen do things in that relationship that were wrong, and Kristen has told Janet that she's made mistakes in that relationship. So when she changed the narrative to Alex is the villain, she's the victim, we all know that's not true. So Janet thought she pulled something insane out of her ass, and she and Michelle were collateral damage in that. Kristen and Luke then end up talking about Guys Night. Kristen said that Jax promised her he wouldn't do this kind of stuff to her, so she felt like she was being backed into a corner, and so she brought up
with Zach, or what Zach had told them about Michelle being a Republican and probably a racist. Kristen explains that before production started, there was a lot of shit-talking within their group. Janet was trying to start shit by implying that Michelle was homophobic or racist, and Zach denied it. Kristen said that when filming started, they all pretended it didn't happen. Zach was upset that she spoke about things and they talked, like, spoke about things that they had talked about in confidence, but said that, you know, he should know better, especially when it's a Janet thing. So again, I don't know what that means. Like, what is a Janet thing? I need to know more about, like, the history of this friendship. Then Kristen says that she feels really awful for upsetting Michelle, and Luke says, like, next time, you know, just keep that information in your back pocket. You don't need to weaponize information. And it's like, he's so supportive because what she did was pretty crazy. But we'll get back to that. So Nia says that she does appearances and social media stuff, and so she ends up having a trip. So Danny will be taking care of the three kids, which is so amazing. Like, two newborn twins and a toddler on your own, like, no parents helping. Like, they really are an all-star couple. And now I totally see why Kristen said that she sort of aspires to be like them. And they really seem truly in love, and they're so good looking. Like, I am just sort of in awe of this family. Even though I called them boring initially, and they still sort of are, they're growing on me. I'm liking them better. Then we have a scene of Jax at his, you know, new Jax's Saloon, Jax's Studio City, whatever his place is called. And he's there with his partners, and he's there to interview people. And he said that he hasn't had to put any money into it because he has partners. And I mean, that is a really sweet deal, and honestly, probably for the best. Jack said that he saw Tom and Tom run into so many issues not involving their partners. And by that, he means, like, you know, marital partners. So he has to involve his wife, but he thinks he can take care of hiring staff. And he says this as a braless woman walks in, which is so funny. So then Brittany and Kristen get together, and Brittany tells the camera that she doesn't know why Kristen does these things, and she doesn't know if maybe she exaggerated something Janet said. So they end up calling Zach on speaker to get, like, clarification, and Zach said the Republican thing was said, but not racism, and he never said that. Kristen said, okay, why would I use the R word unless that's something you said to me, and you're throwing me under the bus? And Zach is like, Kristen, you're the bus driver, and you're running over all the dead bodies. I literally love Zach's euphemisms. Zach says, you took something simple and then blurted it out and accused them of racism. Zach says that Kristen cannot keep a secret to save her life. Brittany is like, the point is that you brought this up at the party. And Kristen is like, okay, but, like, you were all bringing this to my front door. So what she's trying to say here is that, like, as she said before, like, prior to filming, you know, this information was brought to her, and now she feels that she is just the one relaying this information. Brittany is saying, yeah, you shouldn't have brought it up at Michelle's house, at her party, and also without having, like, all of the correct information, Janet not being there, all of this, right? So Brittany is trying to, like, you know, smooth over this situation. Then we have a scene of Michelle and Jesse meeting with a marriage counselor. Oh, and right before that, I just want to mention something else that happened in the Brittany and Kristen scene was Kristen was saying things like, you know, I would never use that word, like the R word, racism. Like, would I really do that? Is this something I would do after what happened to me? And obviously she's referring to being fired from Vanderpump Rules for racism. But this comes up later, which we'll get back to. So then we have a scene of Michelle and Jesse. So yeah, they're meeting with a marriage counselor, and they've apparently met with him a bunch, like, I think virtually. Jesse basically saying that their relationship is, like, constant conflict all the time. Michelle says that a lot of her needs are not being met, which is honestly just so sad. She says that she feels really lonely raising a child. Jesse tells the camera that, like, he doesn't even know if he were more of, like, a passive husband, whether it would have made a difference. But it's annoying that you're not even trying, right? Like, he's just like, well, if I were different, would it really matter? Then Michelle says that he doesn't compliment her and that he, like, sort of pretends to look at her. And the counselor asks when she last felt sexually attracted to Jesse. And Michelle said she doesn't know how to answer that. And Jesse says 3 years, 9 months ago, which is obviously the age of their child plus the amount of time she was pregnant. And then Jesse tells the camera, what is sex again? When we first met, it was all the time. And now it's like, I'm too tired. I just go home from the gym. Like, I don't know. But he was sort of playing it off like it wasn't a big deal. Jesse said that to the counselor, like, what if he does all these things and he's, like, a great guy for 2 months and then she's still not happy? And the counselor's like, your attachment to the result is going to cause you to fail. Like, you do it because you want to do it, not because you're trying to get something out of her. And it's so clear that he just doesn't really understand that or doesn't want to. Like, you don't see in his face, like, that motivation to save his relationship in these ways. And again, I feel like this is something I said last week where, you know, this is super sad, interesting to watch, but also just because we don't know them prior to now. So to watch a couple's marriage fall apart when you don't really have the context of the history of their relationship and we haven't been watching them for many years, we're just not as invested, right? Like, I'm trying to be invested, but again, I didn't know these people prior to a couple weeks ago. So then Janet is showing Jason. So we have a scene of them at home, and she's showing Jason this post that Kristen had just made apparently at that time, in which she had posted, "I would rather adjust my life to your absence than to adjust my boundaries to accommodate your disrespect." And I actually remember when Kristen posted this and everybody thought this was about Stassi. Does anyone else remember that? So Janet explains that she, Brittany, and Michelle were at dinner a few months ago, and Michelle said something like, "Don't say gay laws protect children." And Janet said, "No, you're wrong." Janet said to Jasmine that they were talking about this bill and she thinks Michelle might support it. And she told Jasmine, "If you sense the same thing, it might be a teachable moment." Janet said that she doesn't think Michelle is racist. She just might have gotten into an algorithm that isn't true. Then it got twisted that from the "don't say gay" laws, she must be Republican, so she must be racist. Like, that's sort of how Janet is trying to figure out how Kristen's mind got from one to the other. Janet tells Jason that if Kristen doesn't apologize, she's going to need a break from her. And that's interesting just because it sounds like they recently had already taken a break. And I've been saying this to you guys prior to the premiere of The Valley and for quite some time now, Janet and Kristen are no longer friends. So it's definitely clear why from this episode and from what's been going on. So then Michelle and Jesse host a sophisticated Capri party at one of their listings. It's like an $18.5 million listing. Jasmine introduces us to Melissa, who she's been with for 3 years. She's always considered herself fluid, and Melissa had actually graduated with Jasmine's brother and is from her hometown. On the way there, Kristen says that she wants to make sure that she gets a chance to apologize to Michelle. And, you know, Jesse explains at the party that Michelle, she has a thick skin, but to be labeled as a racist is just absurd, and obviously true. Janet said that Kristen can ignore the most obvious attentions and scenarios and is pretending like nothing is wrong. And Janet is just like straight up pissed. Then Janet just decides to call it out in front of everyone at the table. And she's like, "Kristen decided to say that I said Michelle was racist, which I never said or thought. And I don't know where that came from, but I'm disgusted." And Kristen's like, "It came from Zach." Zach then tells the camera that Kristen was just grabbing at a bunch of random things and putting them together. Kristen said that the game of telephone was that Janet told Jasmine that she should be cautious of Michelle because she is a Republican, and what Zach insinuated at her house to Luke and her was that that would be equal to racism and or homophobia. Jasmine is like, "Take my name out of this. I wasn't a part of any conversation." And Jasmine tells the camera that as a Black woman, yeah, she's experienced racism, but to have a friend throw it out so lightly like it's nothing is not fair to anyone. Zach tells the camera that he's known Michelle forever and he doesn't think she's homophobic, and it's unfortunate that this got said. Kristen apologizes to Michelle for feeling cornered and she should have never said those things out loud, but Jesse's like, "Call it what it is. Call it a lie. Say what you did. Say that you lied." And Luke is like, "Calm down, man." He keeps telling him to calm down, and he tells the camera that this literal sack of shit twisted Kristen's nipple and is now attacking her. And then they just start screaming at each other to shut the fuck up over and over again, back and forth. And Janet's just like, "You know, this has changed everything." And Kristen is like, I didn't make this up. And Janet's like, "You know, I'm done with crazy Kristen." And Kristen tells the camera that she isn't being able to, or being given the chance to evolve. And maybe she's just too honest, which, LOL, Kristen. She said that Zach knows that he fibbed and knows that she's right. Then there's a flashback to 2 days ago where Kristen asked Zach if what he told her about Janet and Michelle was true, and he said yes. But they don't actually clarify precisely what that is. And then Kristen says that she has a walking truth serum now, and it might rub some people the wrong way, but take it or leave it. Jesse says that they have a business that they run together, so if this gets out, Kristen is putting their lives in jeopardy. And then Michelle tries to talk, and Jesse, like, fully cuts her off and is like, "Kristen, you were fired for being a racist." And Kristen tells the camera that she knows she made a mistake, but Jesse is just trying to ruin her name. Kristen said that the worst thing in the world is to be labeled a racist, and no one knows that better than her because she was canceled. She says that she's learned from her mistakes. I mean, have you, Kristen? She says that she hopes her whole life doesn't fall apart again. So I think Kristen is attempting to do her job by doing the most and exposing everything, but this whole story is so convoluted and includes a lot of, like, implications, and this is what was implied, but there's no actual evidence at this time that anyone used the word racist or homophobic. And like I said, Zach doesn't specifically confirm in that clip anything, And Janet has now confirmed on her podcast, This Side of the Hill, that she does with Jason and Jared Lishcombe, that she never used those words. And she also said that on the show as well. So Kristen thinks that she's doing her job and the rest of the cast isn't, but it seems more so like Kristen held on to this to use it on the show, but by muddying it and adding information that couldn't be confirmed and is seriously dangerous, I think she really screwed herself. So that's the end of the Valley recap.
And that's God, what you
why
go
is it
on?
About the damn pasta? Get over the damn pasta, read between the f***ing lines. It ain't about the pasta. It's not about the pasta. It's not about the pasta.
Okay, guys, that's it for I Take Bravo Very Seriously this week. You can listen to this podcast or any of the other episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe to my YouTube channel at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can follow me on Instagram at I Take Bravo Very Seriously and at The Bravo Investigator. You can also follow me on TikTok at The Bravo Investigator. And if you like this podcast, please leave me a 5-star review. And until next time, keep taking Bravo very seriously.